Welcome to another weekend bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast. This is another portfolio profile episode. We're going to talk to a couple of founders today of an AI startup. It's not, however, an Ride Home AI fund portfolio company. We're going to get into that because there's an interesting connecting story there vis-a-vis that. By the way, Chris Messina is also joining us as well. But let's start off by talking to the founders. We have Ian Cairns.
Hey there. How's it going?
And Eric Ryan.
Hello, hello. Greetings from Boulder.
Yes. Today we are going to talk about FreePlay, which is found at freeplay.ai. I want to always call it FreePlay AI, but FreePlay is the name. Give me, whoever wants to lead us off here, give me like the 2-minute elevator pitch of what FreePlay does.
Yeah, awesome. Well, this is Ian. At a high level, we help product teams figure out how to build better software that makes use of large language models. So if you're an established software company, been building software for years, there's now these superpowers available to you through LLMs, but it can be really challenging to figure out how to get them to do the right thing in production. And we help solve that problem. So we build tools for prompt management and version control, observability, for testing and evaluation, so that you can both automate testing and measure and quantify how well you're doing in production. And ultimately, you know, the goal is to help people build a feedback loop so that they can make their features progressively better over time.
So give me a specific use case. I mean, what you just described seems like a broad tool that anyone could use. But someone out there listening that is either an AI startup or a company that is dipping their toe into AI, wants to deploy models, wants to do whatever, explain to me like specifically what I would use you for and why I would use you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think, you know, one of the fun things for us just working in the industry for so long and talking to people in this space has been most folks, when they get started trying to prototype a new idea and see, like, you know, what can they build with an LLM, they don't need us. It's, you know, the common story is, hey, you know, we had this idea, maybe it's been on the roadmap and we thought it would take 2 years to build. Now it seems like OpenAI or another model might make this really easy. And it's really common. We hear a story, people are like, holy crap, you know, we thought that would take us a month. We got a really awesome prototype done in a couple of days or a week. And, you know, so I think those folks, that's the story that where we end up coming in is downstream of that. You know, they are able to build a really cool prototype, but then it gets really complicated to figure out how to put it in production. So, the path from this works and it's really promising 60 or 70% of the time to it works reliably so that we can actually trust it's doing the right thing for our customers on a regular basis. We start to help there. So imagine, like, you know, example, you know, one of the customers I talk about that always just makes sense to people, Help Scout, customer service software company. They've been building a bunch of awesome stuff in their product. Their whole goal is to make customer support agents superheroes, you know, build better relationships with their customers. So, you know, one of the things they're doing is helping people automatically draft an answer to a customer support email without having to press any button or like think about interacting with AI. You just log in as an agent, it's there, right? But, you know, getting that feature to work on a consistent basis is the trick. You know, so how does FreePlay help? Gives them a way to experiment with different versions of a prompt. So, you know, say you get live and it's working in these cases, but not other cases, and you want to fix it. Really common story is that it becomes like a whack-a-mole game. You know, you make some changes to a prompt, maybe you try a different model, you change some settings, and it's still not doing the right thing. You know, you want to figure out how do I make this better, but not just chase that, you know, forever. You know, you need to figure out a way to test across a representative set of examples. So, you know, FreePlay helps you save those kinds of examples. Basically, like your test suite with a large language model is a bunch of examples that you might see in production. And you run them through one version and you run them through the next and you compare the difference and see which one's performing better. So we help with that. And then once things actually get live, you know, we provide a framework to see what's happening in the system to continually test and evaluate. But maybe that's kind of like a basic, I'll pause there.
So there's an observability angle afterwards, but also you're also allowing people to like flip a switch and go between different LLMs and test different things like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so one of the things that we've really focused on when we got started on this, I think there's a lot of people in this space that have been approaching this set of problems as like a quote developer tool problem. And we certainly have a developer tool. There's an integration with FreePlay. But we also noticed there's a lot of people getting involved in building software or improving software here who aren't just software developers. You know, we have cases where product managers or designers are getting involved in prompt engineering and experimentation. Like maybe they're closer to the problem. Maybe it's just English and they want the freedom to do that. You have examples where we've talked to accountants, medical doctors, agronomists, you know, people that are getting involved in QA because, you know, you're trying to use AI to generate a result in a domain where even people on the product development team don't have expertise to know if it's doing the right thing. You know, so FreePlay is helping people both do that QA and experiment. So it's model agnostic. We give people the tools to, you know, use OpenAI, quickly try Anthropic, quickly try another model. And our SDK makes it really easy for developers to do that integration once, basically turn the code into a playground. And then a product manager or somebody else can be a developer, but doesn't have to be somebody who's working in code, can actually swap out models or make changes to prompts and run experiments without having to bug somebody to go do a deploy.
Well, here's the time where we usually pivot to, we'd like to hear about your background and your entrepreneurial journey. But to do that, I want to bring on someone that the listeners know very well, but he hasn't been on for a while. Hey, Chris Messina, how you doing?
Yo, what's up? It's been a minute.
Yeah, we wanted you on because, as we'll explain after they give their backgrounds, well, first of all, you have history with these founders, at least one of them. And it's worth talking about how FreePlay sort of led to the Ride Home AI Fund. Let's do the thing. So, Eric, since Ian's been talking for a while, how about you go first? Why don't you give us your background, your entrepreneurial history, whatever you want to share with us?
That sounds great. Hey, Chris, great to see you, I guess, virtually. We did cross paths once upon a time in the Ginnup years.
Yes.
Activity streams. Era. So,
I mean, it's kind of wild just to think about where we are now with like Mastodon, Federation, ActivityPub, Threads, like all the stuff that we'd worked on before now is finally coming to a head. So it's good to come full circle.
Totally agree. Well, hey everybody, Eric Ryan. I grew up in Delaware. I've been playing with computers since I was a kid. You know, I've been building software and engineering teams for the past 15 or so years. Early engineer at a company called Ginnup, which is a strange name, but it's ping spelled backwards. We built out the pipes for the social analytics, social listening ecosystem. And Ginnup was actually acquired by Twitter in 2014. And there I eventually went on to lead engineering for Twitter's developer platform and say engineer at heart in many ways. But my main focus has always been hiring folks that are much smarter than myself and building a strong culture around them as a foundation, and then try and couple that with a strong execution machine. But Ian and I were chatting about what's next last fall. We wanted to work on LLMs. We saw how transformative that was going to be. We also knew developer products. So we ran a process in Q1 last year or this year, spent time exploring a couple different verticals. Things in education and the customer service space. And we became convinced that that probably wasn't for us. And we wanted to get back to our infrastructure roots. So that's about how we got started with FreePlay.
And Ian, you go and feel free to bring in your Chris Messina anecdotes as applicable here.
Cool. Well, a lot of my background overlaps with Eric. We've worked together most of the last decade. But you know, as on my career side, I've always been on the product side of things, and always working on, you know, I've described it to people as like developer products that are way high up in the stack that are actually helping other people build products. So, way in the early days, back in 2005, I first got involved in the Drupal open source CMS project. I think that was
Dude, that's right. I forgot that we go back that far.
So I knew Chris as this designer, Factory Joe, in the Drupal ecosystem. And I was working for a company called Development Seed that we built a few products. So we were involved in Drupal, but we also launched a news aggregator. We launched a collaboration tool. The third project that we launched was called Mapbox. Mapbox became a much bigger thing. So I got to be around for the beginning days of that. Never got to actually work for Mapbox, the company. But if you don't know Mapbox, Mapbox is used to early on help developers put maps in their products and do cool map visualizations. Now you can also use their SDKs to run a self-driving car program. But check it out. So yeah, I think from there I went on, I got to spend some time bouncing around DC, got to work in the Obama administration as a consultant and do some product related work, helped the White House ship their first API, and had a great experience in public service, you know, that side of things for a little bit, but missed startup days, came back to work with Eric at Gannip, and then went on at Twitter, you know, spent my time, I was there for almost 7 years, eventually ended up leading product for the developer platform and the Twitter API. But yeah, coming full circle, like, you know, Eric and I both got really interested in LLMs together, missed working on technical products together. We'd both gone to other companies that were, you know, more tech enabled businesses and couldn't stay away from what we saw happening. And this was even, you know, before ChatGPT launched. So we were ready to go just in time.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there is no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, their crossword puzzles, just because they're available right now or they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance, so literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on hold with a receptionist. And these docs all have verified reviews from actual real patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. I have personally used ZocDoc to find a podiatrist when I needed one for the first time ever in my life. Go to ZocDoc.com/techmeme and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/techmeme. ZocDoc.com/techmeme. Let's be real for a minute. Most guys would wear a t-shirt every day of their lives if they could. The problem is that most t-shirts are not acceptable to wear at work or out on a hot date night. But today's sponsor, Cuts, has finally changed that. Cuts t-shirts are such high quality, wrinkle-free, and so buttery soft that you can look like you're dressing up even when you're dressing down. Yeah, you heard that. Wrinkle-free. You never have to substitute comfort for fashion ever again. If you see me in a t-shirt, it's likely one from Cuts. I'm also a huge fan of their AO five-pocket pants, the right sort of step-up from jeans without going all the way into dress pants, like literally my ideal Venn diagram of professional-looking but comfortable feeling. When you touch something from Cuts, you can immediately feel the quality. Their proprietary fabric blends are ridiculously soft and breathable, they don't wrinkle, and they look way more expensive than they actually are. For a limited time, our listeners get 20% off your entire order when you use code RIDE at checkout. That's 20% off your order at cutsclothing.com with promo code RIDE. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the perfect blend of style and comfort with Cuts Clothing. cutsclothing.com, promo code RIDE for 20% off.
Right. Well, give me a Messina anecdote if you've got one, and then I will tell you why you guys are so foundational to what Chris and I are doing these days.
Well, we already heard one, I guess, which was, you know, the activity streams protocol that turned into so many things happening with federated social today. Mm-hmm. That was Gannip was one of the earliest adopters of that. Chris helped work on it. And I feel like a lot of that's actually relevant today with what we're facing with large language models. One of the most common problems we face right now, and Activity Streams has been mentioned, is, you know, how do we help normalize the interface between a bunch of different models so that developers can easily experiment and test different things? But I don't know, maybe one of my favorite anecdotes was sitting with Chris the day that he gave up his Factory Joe name and decided to be Real Chris Messina on Twitter. I don't know if he wants to comment any more about that, but there was a deep conversation about having real identities on the internet. And I feel like the last decade, there's been a bunch of issues that have persisted from there.
Yeah, actually, Chris. I remember, pretty sure David Recordin was there and several other folks, whatever. We were at South by Southwest. As I was wont to do, I surely had several cocktails probably, and was feeling just very frustrated because I think I'd probably given a talk and you know, people had probably come up to me and referred to me as Joe, which obviously was not my name. And so that was very confusing, except that was my online handle. And so it was starting to become kind of a drag on my real world experience, where my internet identity was somewhat better known than my real world identity. And the, I guess, juxtaposition of those two things made it seem like it was time to perhaps retire the handle and, you know, actually become myself on the internet. Up until that point, I think I was terrified of that whole prospect of outing myself on the internet and therefore being accessible to all the trolls and all the other people, which of course I probably was one. But anyways, I think what ended up happening was Twitter had the ability to change your username, as many platforms do. And so, you know, in this sort of, you know, drunken moment of courage, I suppose, decided to go ahead and change my username from Factory Joe to Chris Messina. And man, it was such a weird sort of feeling of nudity in that moment, of internet nudity, I guess, or death, either one. It was, I felt vulnerable. I'll put it that way. That it took me a moment to just, like pause and kind of like collect myself, and was like, okay, it's done. And within moments, I went back to sort of like claim my old username, and someone had grabbed it. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this is terrible. Cause back then, like, permalinks were like a really big deal, and like link rot was like something we were worried about. And so all of a sudden, all my links to all my old tweets had broken, because of course now I had a new username, and now someone else had already grabbed that name. And I was like, you got to be like, who would want that name? It's the dumbest name ever. And it turned out that it was either David Recordin or Max Angle, some of our friends from the identity space. And it was just such a like transitional and pivotal moment, both for me personally on the internet, and then also for the degree to which I guess we started to really recognize how much these online personas and personalities and identities really make a big difference. And fortunately, I think I was able to, you know, punch Recordin in the shoulder several times until he finally like gave up the account. But there was just a moment of real loss. And it's funny, I guess, reflecting on this year and I think getting into this conversation about free play, you know, once, you know, Elon started making his changes on Twitter, you know, now X, and I decided to leave in April, you know, I went through my second digital death. And so that first digital death of Factory Joe was sort of like, I don't know if it prepared me for this year, but effectively allowed me to let go, you know, my Twitter account, my 100,000 followers, and to move on. And I feel like that's a similar sort of journey perhaps that you've had to go through, but maybe in a little bit of a different way with regards to, you know, your former employer.
Yes. So if I could bring that up, and this will seg into how free play led to the birth of the Bright Home AI Fund. So essentially, you sort of yada yada over this part, but last fall, you were looking for something new to do, and that was because the great Twitter calling happened.
I wouldn't call it great.
Well,
unfortunate, but sure, yes. Yes, the substantial.
Yes. So we don't need to go into any of that drama or anything like that, but one of the, I'll give you the connection to the AI fund. You know, as I've said many times, you know, Chris has helped me out with my other fund for many years. And I had always said, if there's somebody that is doing something new that by definition, you'd almost invest in them sight unseen, let me know. And Chris says, oh my God, like this whole team from Twitter is jumping into this AI space. And so that was almost the birth of the thesis of the fund, is that if folks like you were coming off the bench to do something new, then we were like, well, this is because we were already activated, and Chris can speak to this as well. Like we felt like this was the biggest new moment in both of our professional lives in tech since Web 2.0. And we were like, if there's other folks that are like us that are like, oh my God, this is so new, this is so amazing, those are the people that we want to fund. And so literally the whole conversation about getting connected to you all then led to Chris and I talking about, well, then let's just do a fund to do that. And so now the Right Home AI Fund exists. And so Free Play, that's your fault.
Love it.
Amazing.
I don't think we actually knew that story until recently, but yeah. It was a fun time. Like I said earlier, like Eric and I had both gone and done other companies in between. You know, Eric was at a company called Main Street. I was at a company called First Base. But that was definitely part of our story, is the two of us were both excited to build with LLMs. And we knew a bunch of our crew were looking for new jobs.
On the market or soon to be.
It was an exciting time to get a lot of the old band back together and get to build with people who we really love working with and trust. And for all the other things that might have been heavy about that time, there was a lot of just really great people and incredible talent at the company. So,
so let me ask you about that specifically, to bring it back to Free Play's story. What was that like, in the sense that, like, as you described it, you see the LLM and AI moment happening. You have previous experience with developer products and APIs and product itself, and it's not. Like, it's when people who are listening are thinking about, well, I would like to do a startup, I'd like to do a thing. Can you walk through that process of saying, we know we want to do a thing? Some people just know they want to do a thing. Some people know they want to do a thing in a space. Some people know they want to do a thing to solve a specific problem. Can you, to what degree you're able to remember this sort of thought process, like, walk us through how that worked for you? Like, we know we want to do something here, but what's the best thing that we can do with this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know, trying to remember. I'd say this is the first time that I saw a help wanted sign. Both we've talked about this. Ian and I saw a help wanted sign for something that is truly transformative, that our skill set is applicable to. Right. So I think the altruist in me was always like, oh, I'd love to get into, you know, green energy or carbon credits or something like that. But never really saw a direct connection with being able to help. And I don't know, that I think that was the initial spark. Like, I can actually jump in and help here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we also, you know, we had a gut check. You know, we talked to each other a bunch early on of like, wait a second, anybody that's starting a company, anyone giving advice about starting a company, like the classic line is, you know, don't start with the solution. Mm-hmm. Go start with, you know, a problem, fall in love with the problem, be ready to find different solutions to the problem. And you know, we were trying to gut check early on, like, wait, we just want to work on this amazing technology. Is that the right answer? You know, so we actually did try to be faithful to go do some real like bottom up research and understand like what was going on in this space, where were the opportunities. I think we did come back around pretty quickly to the things that we've known and are good at, but you know, that were a unique new problem. Like, there's a paradigm shift happening in how people are building software. We're still in such an early you know, stage of that too. And I think we saw that at OpenAI Dev Day last week. You know, they really rolled out a even more bold vision, I think, of what, you know, the next stage of interacting with computers is going to look like. But we saw that it was different enough that for people that we'd worked with and built products for a decade or 15 years, you know, there was going to be a real learning curve. And we also knew early on there was going to be this explosion. You know, there's an order of magnitude, if not two orders of magnitude, more people in software development building with ML technology today than there were a year ago. And most of them have never run ML systems. They've not had to deal with non-deterministic systems. They've not had to figure out like, okay, you know, how do I deal with something that's an approximation, much less generative models where they're not going to do the same thing twice. And there's just enough differences that there'd be a real need there. That again, like Eric said, aligned to our experience and our background. So, but yeah, that took us 3 months of doing some real, exploration and research before.
But by research, you mean like literally talking to people, and you had the advantage of, you know, you had folks that you had worked with before that you can reach out to and essentially say, if you're exploring the space, what are the problems you're having? What are the pain points you're seeing or whatever? Because I even think we invested before you settled finally on what the product was going to be. Yeah. I think we invested while you were in this process of literally asking people, if you're trying this, what do you wish someone could help you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And I think, at this point, we've probably talked to well over 100, you know, early on that first sprint, you know, several dozen CTOs, heads of product, design leaders, senior engineers, that companies ranging from seed stage to public companies. And, you know, and that was one of the crazy things is everybody was saying the same thing, no matter what stage you were at. There was this, like, the last time I saw it was with GDPR, but not such a positive, you know, reason. Well, where the whole industry just stops and they're like, top down, we're going to do something different. You know, next week we're going to tell our teams, go build something with OpenAI.
And so they're all saying we're going to build something, but what was the thing that kept coming back in terms of the answer of what the pain point is that led you to what FreePlay is today?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that sense of people saying, hey, we got through our V0. We created the prototype that's promising. Our customers actually do like it, but we feel insecure, uncertain, maybe terrified about the lack of understanding about what the thing's actually doing in production. We have no way to, improve on it with any kind of quantitative discipline or confidence, you know, talking to CTOs and heads of engineering who are saying, you know, I've been running a professional software organization for a long time. We have, you know, reliable testing practices and discipline around QA, and we don't even know how to QA this new thing that we built.
I was going to say, so one of the things that's, I guess, coming out for me in how you're describing this, and I think I'm trying to sort of, I don't know, like figure out and relate to both how like software design and software production and engineering is changing, but then also how product development and that work is changing. And I think what FreePlay is doing and what is increasingly happening to product development is there's a different type of scientific method that's being brought into the fold where it's a lot about experimentation and it's a lot about sort of maybe seeing around corners and cutting out like edge cases and kind of generally like steering an AI kind of like in a direction, but in a way that it's almost like, you know, a herd of cattle and it's kind of like you can get them to move in a certain way, but there's still some random aspects to it. So I guess my question is around positioning relative to, you know, existing solutions for product development and for engineering relative to where this goes, right? So things are moving so quickly. Obviously, OpenAI Developer Day also brings a whole new set of concepts. You know, clearly they're grabbing hold of this GPT's concept. What do you see as maybe where FreePlay is in like 1 to 2 years in terms of the way in which you want to be used by your customers? Is it something that is for post-production and post-launch where you're like, there's a constantly, evolving the product surface area and what it can do. And so it's basically like an infinite game. Or does AI software ever kind of end where you can be like, cool, that's like our 1.0 and it's like done. Because it feels like, yeah, like that doesn't exist anymore. So how do you see this field kind of evolving?
Yeah. You think you're done and then a new model comes out that's compelling because it's state of the art or it's more cost effective or it's better latency or whatever else. There's, you know, we're seeing that in the past week. All of a sudden, people that have said we're done suddenly want to test the new OpenAI models. There's a ton of interest in open source models right now for data privacy reasons and otherwise. So yeah, we don't think it's going to be done. I mean, I think about it like, what's the enduring need of any product development organization? Like everybody's ultimately trying to build a better product for their customers and make sure that they're growing in a positive way, right? And, you know, I think about that way, like maybe free play in 1 to 2 years is something like maybe Amplitude, if you're familiar with that, has been for Web2 software. You know, what's the way that you understand how the product's performing, get insights that help you figure out how to make it better, run experiments to actually quantify that you are in fact making it better, and really bring that feedback loop to life.
With everybody fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Plus, you can send with confidence knowing your emails are actually reaching your customers thanks to Constant Contact's best-in-class 97% deliverability rate. I use this, and you should too. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee, so get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com. Whenever I need to do financial research for this show, for instance, during tech earnings season, when I have to analyze how various companies' stocks have been performing, I only ever turn to our sponsor today, Yahoo Finance. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They are the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, their real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
That raises like this really interesting question, I guess, around the relationship of generative AI applications and perhaps conventional applications that are well served by an Amplitude, right? So is there sort of a collision course where these things come together and Amplitude is offering similar types of functionality that you are? Or is this sort of, you know, product teams will be using 3 or 4 tools that are kind of adjacent to what Amplitude does, what you're doing, and it's all part of a suite that is required to build both conventional software that has somewhat conventional interfaces, you know, like pixel-based interfaces, and then there's generative AI aspects, which are kind of anticipatory and probabilistic in that they work with the customer, the client, the user to achieve some sort of outcome that's a little bit more abstract.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is so early. Like yes. It'll be fascinating to see. I think a lot of people are rushing into this space. If you've been building tooling and observability or tooling and continuous integration testing, like you're seeing a lot of established companies say, hey, we have an answer for LLMs. And the interesting part is so far it's needed to be a different answer, right? Like so much of the way software has worked in the past is around structured data, you know, things that can be clearly and easily quantified and counted. And now, like a lot of the folks we're working with, you know, you're generating these large blocks of text that are very hard to make sense of and very hard to quantify, especially if you've not been doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were at Dev Day last week, some of the OpenAI team did a session. I think the talks are all online now, but, you know, they were talking about just the challenges of going to production. And one of their big slides said lack of evaluations has been a key challenge for deploying to production. Mm-hmm. You know, what are they getting at? It's like, you know, at some point you have to quantify what is the characteristics of how this thing's behaving across a bunch of example use cases. And that's really what we're doing. I think we're taking an AI first approach. I think we're, you know, like just very focused on the problems that are unique in this space. And I think we're also really focused on this change that is happening with who and how software is getting built, you know, bringing more folks into the process than just the developers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I have to imagine a lot of existing tools will add LLM features. I think we're bullish on the opportunity to just reimagine from the ground up what these kinds of solutions should look like to really help people build better products when you're starting with generative AI as a way to create them.
I think it's you know, it just occurs to me, and I'll let Brian go in a sec. You know, there's a pretty well-known McLuhan kind of, I don't know if it's an adage or a dictum. I don't know what the difference is, but somebody said, you know, so, you know, McLuhan, famous, you know, media theorist, often sort of pointed out that new mediums are often kind of at first filled with the content from the previous era, from the previous media epoch, because people are just trying to figure out how to do it, you know? So like they'll take like radio shows and they'll try to adapt them to television, and it just, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't work. And in this case, I don't know that it doesn't feel like we've had this conversation in the tech world as much, but it's occurring to me that code is a type of media format, and that we're moving into a world where like coding and software development as a medium for collaboration or for solving problems is suffering a similar type of circumstance, where previous developer tools are attempting to be brought into the LLM world, the world of like sort of software coding and generative AI, and it's not a good fit. It's a different medium. It's a different format. It requires a different way of working with the tools that allows for a lot more non-determinism, you know, as you pointed out. And so it requires, and so I guess like the question I have is, to what degree, and I suppose this is what you guys are already doing, and so maybe the answer is in what you're building, but the degree to which you start from carte blanche to solve these problems for generative AI application developers versus building bridges to existing IDEs or software that already exists, like the Copilot model kind of builds into an existing context where there's like code completion, as opposed to what I'm increasingly seeing like on Product Hunt are people that are like almost like launching like application templates where you can kind of interactively choose the parts that you want and the problem that you solve, and the application kind of designs and builds itself, and then you iteratively improve it. So you're not really getting into Sketch, you're not really getting into Figma. You can use those tools if you want to, but they're almost clumsy relative to the way in which the software allows you to just express an idea and move towards like an outcome. I don't know if that makes sense as a question, but I guess I'm asking, you know, again, like, does it make sense to sort of build free play into more existing developer tools that already exist, or to focus more on a green space?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting question to answer in the coming years. I think what's been happening so far, you know, I was just on the phone with a team last week, like a household name media brand, and they're building in this space, you know, and they described tools that they're working with, like traditional ML ops tools, you know, even tools that have been created in the last, you know, five, half dozen years somewhere. And some traditional observability tools, and they're like basically trying to map them into this space. And then we walk through, you know, what we're doing at FreePlay. And, you know, it was really encouraging. So, you know, kind of see the lights come on for folks. And like, wait, like you've built the workflow, not just the instrumentation, but you've built the workflow that is the workflow we need for this new reality. And I think that's what's different, right? It's like, it's not just an observability problem. It's not just a testing problem. It's not just a version control problem. And there's a different enough way of creating with this kind of technology that, you know, we've found a need for a fresh workflow. So we'll see how it all unfolds, but that's where we are today.
Nice.
Second to last topic, since we've been mentioning the OpenAI keynote, essentially, or everything that they did last week. I'm just curious for your take and almost the macro level take in terms of what they announced, for what they announced and what it means for the overall AI ecosystem right now. I've heard some people say they announced more than I expected. They didn't announce as much as I expected. Where's GPT-5, or why didn't you open source GPT-3? But then also some people are like, the things they did announce are weirdly underpowered. I'm trying not to lead the witness here, but whatever your take was on what they announced and what it means in a macro sense for the ecosystem.
Well, I mean, my quick takeaway was, I feel like, you know, we saw a company that's executing at a level that very few others in the industry are. What they rolled out, I thought, was incredibly polished and, you know, well done. If you haven't watched the keynote and you only have a couple minutes, jump straight to minute 33. Watch Roman, who leads developer relations over there, show the new assistance API and just the story that he tells, and how it all comes together with voice and, you know, images, doing OCR on PDFs, and creating an application pretty quickly on the fly. It's impressive.
I was actually going to ask you, since you mentioned Roman, like, I presume you guys overlapped and worked together. Is that right? At Twitter?
Briefly. Yeah. We were there at the same time.
And so I'm just like, you know, obviously he spent a stint at Stripe and so has that background, but not to be too insidery, but I'm just curious, like, what your impression is of having him kind of at the head over at OpenAI on their developer relations front. And if there's any observations you have having worked with him.
Well, I mean, I think if you watch the keynote, like, it's similar work that I saw him do at Stripe. He's just incredible at putting the pieces together of an otherwise complicated set of APIs and developer surface area and just showing in a simple way how they can be useful to people. So, yeah. You know, OpenAI's got this opportunity to get the entire world using their platform. Creativity might be the limit. Like, I think it's great. But yeah, I mean, I think what we saw there was there's a ton of stuff. If you're working in enterprise software, let's put it this way. Most of our focus is with people that are building B2B software. You know, they did show a new horizon line. You know, if you're maybe working on AI research, you were left wondering about, you know, why didn't they open source GPT-3 or some of the other aspects of it? But I think that the practical application of how LLMs can come together and multimodal can be used, you know, we just saw it in a really polished way. So I think that's what they did well. And I think that's a lot of where our customers are focused is, oh, great, now there's a new horizon line, not just how do we adopt these new models. Like, we spent last week, you know, basically at lunch break at dev day, getting the new models added to free play. But then, you know, what's multimodal testing going to look like? What's, you know, the assistance API going to do? I think those are all things that most companies are going to start to step into throughout 2024 and maybe not until 2025. Like, there's just a lag for adoption. So I think in that way, it's like, there's a lot to grow into for the ecosystem there.
When you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation where they check user identity. But user devices can roll right through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months, or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it all works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride, collide.com/ride.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Erica, I wanted to offer you the last word on this. Either, again, a macro level sense of what you took away from that, or if you have a sense of where OpenAI itself is going, did you see a vision of what that company, what direction they want to go in?
I don't know. I think on the first part, one of the things that really stood out to me was the focus on cost optimization, especially in a world where, you know, there's been a lot of chatter about open source models and them being competitive. The fact that they are deeply optimizing on cost there, I think just changes the calculus for a lot of people that are building with this. So I don't know. The land grab is interesting.
Land grab in the sense that are they grabbing part of the ecosystem for themselves that is the ecosystem that maybe some of us are hoping for?
I don't know. Remains to be seen. Okay. I mean, I think if you're, you know, someone that's building with this and you're worried about cost, you know, there is real cost to running an open source model. And you just need to pay attention to that.
Okay. What I do want to wrap with is our usual bits, which are, again, this is free play. You can find out more at freeplay.ai. But also, anyone listening who is interested in maybe becoming a client or working with you or a partner, are you guys hiring? Basically, this is at the end of the show. If people are intrigued by what y'all are working on, how can they get in touch? What are you looking for? What are the asks from the audience if you're looking for something right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll talk about one and let Eric talk about the other. You know, on the using free play side, you know, we just launched a public beta 2 weeks ago. So we've been heads down building with a small group of customers for most of the year, now open for business and ready for anybody to come check it out. So if you're interested, freeplay.ai is the place to go sign up for that. And then we are hiring.
Yeah, on the hiring front, I mean, look, we're always down to talk to fantastic engineers. Right now, we're focused on full stack folks. We actually are now hiring our first full-time product design lead. And we're also looking for someone, maybe a little bit of a Swiss Army knife, call it DevRel, call it sales engineer, someone that can help us really drive and focus on customer success and onboarding and can really get deep into the technical details with our customers and make them happy.
Obviously, I'm sure there's a place on the website that you can look at those opportunities. But also, I will offer up my email, brian@ridehomefund.com, if folks are interested in those two roles. And I will forward those along to Ian and Eric. Gentlemen, thanks for telling us about Free Play. Again, not part of the AI, the Ride Home AI Fund, but literally the inspiration for it.
Super excited. Had the AI fund existed, it would have invested. Yes.
100%. So I, you know, thrilled to be an investor myself. And Chris has been working with you all as well anyway. So just thrilled with what you're doing and thanks for coming on the show to tell us about it.
Yeah. Thank you guys both for the support and for having us on. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, gentlemen.
Good to see you guys.
Hey, Chris. We got to find a way, at least in the new year, for you to come back and do an episode, just you and me jamming. Definitely. On something. Yeah.
We'll do it.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Love y'all.